Good morning. This is Loretta Bertelot at the Tulsa Historical Society and Museum. The date is February 16th, 2019. And my guest this morning is Rebecca Hatchett. And I met her at the Tulsa the Southwest Tulsa Historical Society. And she has come in to share her story today. So, Becky, welcome. And let me just start. Why don't you just start telling about your family? Make sure you include your birthday.
Okay.
And where you were born. Okay.
All right. We're longtime Red Forkians, I guess. We came to Red Fork in 1915. My family, my great grandfather, George Turner Castle, and his wife, Sarah Florida Day Castle, came to Red Fork in 1915 from Davenport, Oklahoma, but before that from Morgan County, Kentucky. And what is kind of exciting to me is that they rented the Clinton farmhouse and lived in the Clinton farmhouse from 1915 to 1919. So when you see that beautiful columned, porched Clinton farmhouse that the Southwest Tulsa Historical Society uses on a lot of their things, that is a house that our family lived in. So that's always been really neat to us.
Do you know the location of that house?
Hmm?
Do you know the location of that house, the address?
It's where Clinton Junior High School is now. They donated that land, and so where Clinton Junior High or middle school and elementary, all of Westside Elementaries almost are there now. But it's on West 41st Street in Red Fork now. So,
thank you.
Anyway, so they came here from Davenport, and how they got to Davenport, I do know. They came from Morgan County, Kentucky in 1907, and some Methodist ministers had bought land in Davenport and were encouraging ministers in Kentucky to move to Oklahoma and take land in the Davenport area. And so they actually came with my great-great-grandparents, the Days, and but they never lived on the west side of Tulsa. They lived in other parts of Tulsa, and they lived in Davenport, and they lived in Claremore. But so they came following the Days from Kentucky. The Castles came in 1907. And my grandmother remembered the bells whistling and, you know, the bells ringing and the whistles whistling on the day that statehood was declared in 1907. They came in August, and statehood was in November. So
that's exciting.
She was here for that. And what's really interesting is that the Oklahoma Historical Society has First Families of the Twin Territories is an organization that you can belong to. And you have to show that your ancestor was here before statehood. And I can prove it for three of my grandparents. I can't prove it for my grandmother, who actually remembered it, and because they only came in August, and it happened in November, so there's no records to prove that they were here in 1907. But they were. She remembered that. So my great-grandfather had been a county court clerk in Morgan County, Kentucky, and but by the time they came to Oklahoma, he had arthritis so badly that he had to wear braces on his legs and was barely mobile, and so he was not really working. There were eight children, and my great-grandmother had to work. Even, you know, back in those early days, because he was not able to. And his job, he sat on the porch of the Clinton house and counted the number of cars that would drive by in a day, which you can think would not be very many in 1915. So my grandmother worked. Well, first, my grandmother, who was Fanny Castle Smith, took the civil service exam so that she could be the postmaster at Red Fork. And then she was teaching at that time, so she turned that postmistress job over to her mother, and that was her job for a time. She was the postmistress of Red Fork. And this is Sarah Florida Day Castle. And then later she quit that job and went to work making salads at the Mayo Hotel because she could make more money doing that than she could being postmistress of Red Fork. So, she also did all kinds of little things to make money. My grandmother told me that that we called her Big Mom. So that's Sarah Florida Day Castle. Big Mom sold milk to the people that lived on houseboats on the Arkansas River. So she would, you know, milk her cow and sell the milk down, take the buggy and down to the Arkansas River and sell milk to the people that lived in houseboats. I don't know. That's what my grandmother said.
So they actually lived on houseboats.
I guess so. That's the first I've heard of it and never have heard it, but that's what my grandmother told me.
Okay.
It's really kind of interesting that both teaching jobs, my grandmother was a teacher for 43 years, and post office jobs run in our family. They had been postmasters back, the Castles had been postmasters back in Kentucky. My brother was a postman for 20, 25 years before he retired. And we've got lots of teachers in the Castle family too. So that seems to be the kind of jobs that we did. So they lived in the Clinton farmhouse from 1915 to 1919, and I think they got by on the jobs that Big Mom could do, and also the boys were big enough then that they started to work. And there was my uncle, Forrest, who later became the chief of the OSBI, Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation. My uncles, Warner and Wardy, were both worked at the railroad. And that's the only, that's the only way only reason I can think of that they might have come to Red Fork is that they were looking maybe for railroad jobs, because both of them spent their lives working on the railroad at the Red Fork Depot. So in 1919, they decided to build their own house, and Big Mom and her dad, Thomas Jefferson Day, built, no, that's wrong, James Thomas Day, sorry, that was the other, that's another grandpa, built their house at 3319 West 38th Street, but right behind Park Elementary School, or Red Fork, it was Red Fork School before that. They built the house themselves using another house in the neighborhood as kind of a template for what they wanted their house to look like. And Big Mom was working on the roof when family members came by to tell her that her first grandchild had been born. So she was quite a go-getter. She lived by herself up until her 80s, and she was both blind and deaf and lived by herself in that house until she died in the 1960s. I'm sure this must have been in the 20s, the boys came home from their late shifts at the railroad or whatever, and found her plucking chickens in the kitchen, because somebody had come to try to rob her livestock that she had, and had wrung the chickens' necks and dropped them in a bag, and then when she came out with the shotgun, they ran away, and so she had to pluck all the chickens and cook them so they wouldn't go to waste. And so that was always a big story that they told. later she modified this house. The house, you have to understand, was on the last street behind the school, and behind us was Red Fork Hill. So it was, as kids, we loved it there because we played on the hill a lot, and we played in the, you know, we had a yard with, you know, wonderful big trees and a whole lot in the back where we raised chickens and a goat and all kinds of things when we were kids, even in the 60s. You know, in the 20s and 30s when they first lived there, you know, it was important that they be able to, you know, have their own eggs and milk and things like that. So later, Big Mom kind of modified the house so that any of her kids could come and live with her that wanted to. So it had two front doors and kind of two living areas on both sides of the house so that anybody that needed to come and live with her could, and lots of her kids did at different times. My grandmother and grandfather lived there in the 30s when my grandfather was on strike from the refinery. So they lived there for several years with her.
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
Why did they move in during that strike?
Well, you know, I'm guessing for monies, you know, to save money.
Had they lived in company housing before? That's what I'm wondering.
I don't think so. I think when they first got married, I have to say my grandfather was Weaver Harris Smith, and he was from Collinsville, and he met my grandmother when she was doing teaching in between Collinsville and Owosso in the teens. And she was Fanny Castle and then became Smith, so Fanny Castle Smith. And they went to housekeeping, as my grandmother would say, in the Searcy House, which was a little house that they rented off of 25th West Avenue in Red Fork. I don't think they had bought their house yet, but at 2717 West 42nd Street, but they may have. And I'm guessing that they, just to save money, they went to live with Big Mom because Grandpa's money wasn't coming in. My grandmother was still getting money for teaching. Mm-hmm. And the men at the refinery used to tease my grandfather that his wife worked. And he always said, well, I can't help it if she's smart enough to do that. You know, implying that their wives were not.
Do you remember about how long the strike lasted? The DX refinery strike? Do you remember how long that lasted?
I don't. I've been doing a little research lately. That's what I'm saying. I'm thinking. I feel like it started in 37 or 38 and wasn't completely over until 40.
And it was not DX at that time. It was still Mid-Continent, I think.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
right.
I'm sorry. Okay,
that's right. So Grandpa was a steam fitter. That's what he did for a pipe fitter. That's what he did for a living. So he helped build the public service plant that's on the river and then worked at the refinery. And, you know, I heard a lot about this. I heard them talk about the strike a lot when I was a kid, but I really can't give you many details about it. I don't know, other than I know he was involved in it. So they did live. But my grandmother, I did want to talk quite a bit about her because she is a person that a lot of people on the West Side remember because she taught at Pleasant Porter for 30 years. She started teaching she just had a high school education, which of course teachers could, you know, begin teaching in those days with that. And I have some of her certificates where she was, you know, certified to teach certain grades. She later went back to Northeastern and to Henry Kendall College, I think, the University of Tulsa, to get her degree, but she didn't have it when she started. She was 19 or something, I think, when she started teaching.
And her name again was?
Fanny Castle, and then Smith.
Okay.
But she started as Fanny Castle, in a little one-room school between Owosso and Collinsville. And I remember her telling me that it was during World War One, and a lot of what she had to do during recess was to break up the fights between the Indian kids and the German kids, because that was not very far from German Corner in Owosso, where a lot of German families lived. And of course, the, you know, the ill feeling during World War One that, you know, she had to deal with a lot in her with her students. But she met my grandfather because his brother and he ran a candy kitchen in Collinsville, and she was boarding with the mother of the brother's wife. So there was, you know, they were introduced and started dating. And my grandmother had a boyfriend in Red Fork, but Grandpa would put her on the train in Collinsville on Fridays, and Gilbert would meet her at the depot in Red Fork. But eventually she decided that she wanted to marry my grandfather, and so they married in 1918, and she came to, she had already been teaching in Red Fork at that point, I think. And she taught at Red, when it was Red Fork, she taught when it was Park School, she taught at McBurney, she taught, and then she taught at Pleasant Porter for 30 years, I think all in the same room. And she taught sixth grade that whole time, I think. And she is why I wanted to be a teacher, because every time we went to the grocery store, we would run into someone who remembered her and said that she was the best teacher they ever had. So I wanted someone to say that about me. So that was, you know, the reason that I always wanted to be a teacher. And I still hear at Southwest Tulsa Historical Society meetings, there are still people there who had her as a teacher and will say the same thing to me, that she was a wonderful teacher. So let's see. I kind of was talking about Big Mom's kids stayed pretty close and ate dinner at her house every Sunday. And at one time, she lived on 38th Street, right behind Park Elementary School, what became Park Elementary School. She had children living on 39th Street, on 40th Street, on 41st Street, and on 42nd Street, because they all stayed pretty close to her. And my grandmother and granddad were living on 42nd Street, 2717 West 42nd Street. And I'll come back to that in a little bit, because our house got taken by the Red Fork Expressway. So that was the house I kind of grew up in until fourth grade. My dad and Uncle Mac were born in 1928. They had been married 10 years and had not had any children. And then they got twins in 1928. So my dad and my Uncle Mac were the first twins born in 1928 in Tulsa. My grandmother was out for a couple of years, you know, with them, and then started right back to teaching at Porter in 1930. And they talked to a lot about the 30s and how difficult it was, how hot it was. And even, I mean, you know, even though the Dust Bowl really was Western Oklahoma more than it was, they had a lot of problems here too. I know my grandmother said that she used to hang wet sheets in the doors of the house so that it would catch the dust and make it cooler in the house, when they were, you know, when it was so bad in the 30s. And my dad had asthma too, so that made it worse. So they bought the house at 2717 West 42nd Street, which is right behind Crystal City. And so they grew, I mean, I was not alive remembering the original Crystal City amusement park. I think some of it was still there when I was very young, but I don't remember it. But my family, my grandparents, were living there, and there was a story written up in the paper about my grandmother and an interview with her, and she said that she a couple of things that she remembered about Crystal City were that a parachutist was trying to parachute into Crystal City and ended up in their yard. That's how close they were. And I remember her saying her dad, remember the crippled one, the one that couldn't, you know, could just sit on the porch. He was so excited to find out that a horse was going to jump off a platform into a big, you know, big thing of water, you know, that he wanted to see that. And so he managed to make it to Crystal City, even in his crippled condition, so that he could see the horse jumping into the water tank. So that was a big thing that they did. And I swear, I think they said they could hear lions. Was there a zoo there? I remember them saying that they could hear the lions roaring at night.
I think there was a small one.
Yeah. So we lived that close to Crystal City. My dad and my Uncle Mac went to Porter. They had their mother as a teacher. They went to Clinton and they went to Webster and they graduated in 1946. And that house on 42nd Street, we lived right around the corner from this big house, this big rock house that was at least two or three stories. And my brother and I thought it was a spy house. We thought spies lived there. We couldn't figure out, you know, who would live in a house like that. And it was way back in kind of a big wooded lot, and we didn't know. So someone recently had posted on Facebook and asked if anybody else remembered that house and wondered, you know, whose it was or what it was. And so I did a little bit of research on it, and it belonged to the man who started Crystal City. And I don't remember it right off the top of my head. By the time we were living there, I think it was a nursing home or something. That's why there was so much coming and going from there, that we thought it was a spy house, but it was really a nursing home. And it actually turned out that one of my Castle cousins married Jack Silver, and his mother and dad had operated that house as a nursing home, I found out. But I didn't know that at the time, and, you know, it was an exciting, you know, spooky house to me. So my grandmother went to teaching at Porter in 1930. And she was kind of known for doing things that got the kids involved and hands-on kinds of things that, you know, they like for teachers to do now, but were kind of unusual back then. They went out on the school grounds and measured an acre, because a lot of the kids couldn't really envision what an acre was. They did a reenactment of the land run. One of her principals said one time that he thought she could make anything with a package of Denison crepe paper, so she would make all kinds of costumes for her kids. They put on operettas, and every year in the spring, they would wind the Maypole for the May Day celebration, and I always just thought that was the coolest thing. And of course, they took our house at 2717 West 42nd Street for the Red Fork Expressway, and I had to move schools from Porter to Park for my fifth and sixth grade year, and I didn't get to wind the Maypole, so I was very unhappy about that. So,
traditions die hard.
Yeah, so that had been something I had been looking forward to and didn't get to do. Okay, so my dad was a dancer. He and my Uncle Mac both danced when they were in school. I have a neat picture to show about that. But he met my mom at a dance downtown. He danced all of his life. In fact, he danced the night he passed away from a heart attack. So, but he danced his whole life, and he met my mom at a dance downtown, probably at the Cimarron Ballroom or at Kane's, because those were the two places that he went a lot, but it might have been a different one, I'm not sure. And she had moved to Tulsa from Destin, Oklahoma, and was living at the YWCA, And so that's how they met. And they married in 1952, and I was born in 1953. They bought a house in Park Grove, which was an addition to Red Fork, kind of out West 41st Street towards Berry Hill. My brother was born in 1956, and then my mom passed away in 1957 from lupus. And my brother was only 4 months old. So we moved in with my grandparents, Weaver and Fanny Castle Smith, and my grandmother managed to continue working for a couple of years, but it was getting so hard to manage two little kids at home. And now that I'm in my 60s, it's hard for me to even think about taking on she took on a 3-year-old and a 4-month-old when she was in her 60s. And so she retired then to stay home with us full time. And by then I was in school, but my brother wasn't yet. And so she stayed home to take care of us. And my dad was wonderful as well. You know, I always talk about my grandmother raising me, and she did. You know, everyone talks about their mom. I mean, you know, your mom is the one really who raises you, but my dad had a lot to do with us too. He spent a lot of time with us, and he never remarried, and so he was always, you know, there to do things with us. And he would come home from work at Cooper Supply Company, I think, in Tulsa, where he was working then, and take me for ice cream at Red Fork Drug when I was just, you know, little. And that makes me think of Red Fork, what we call Red Fork Corner now, the brick buildings that are on Southwest Boulevard at the overpass on 41st Street, because I remember those things from living. We lived right behind that. So Red Fork Drug was on the corner. Hopkins Dry Goods was next door, and that was where I got material for the first dress that I made in home ec and, you know, in junior high school. I was not very good at it, and I still don't like to sew. And Whitener's Department Store was another place that we shopped there on that little corner. So that was a fun, those always bring back fun memories from going to those places. And I went to Pleasant Porter Elementary School through fourth grade when we lived on 42nd Street. And I don't know. I guess because I'm a teacher, I kind of want to recognize the teachers I had, maybe. I guess that's what I think about. But I can still go through that school almost, you know, room by room and tell you who taught there. And I guess I was there so much because my grandmother taught there. But when you went in the front door, just to your left was the office.
Now, which school are you in?
This is Pleasant Porter.
Okay.
Just to the left was the office, and my grandmother had two principals that I remember. I think there was a Mr. Kennedy before my time, but during the time I was there, Mr. Lee Arnold, and she and Mr. Arnold were really good friends, and Mr. Ben Weehy was the principal when I left there in fourth grade. And then right in front of you was the auditorium / gymnasium. So it was, they used it as both the gym, and then when they needed to use it for an auditorium, it had a stage on the end, and they would set up chairs. And to the left in the hall and downstairs was the cafeteria. And I remember making construction paper collar and cuffs to wear at a Thanksgiving, you know, meal in the cafeteria. And the food was so good, you know, it was bean chowder and macaroni and cheese and all those wonderful things that everybody remembers from Tulsa Public Schools. If you turned right from the front door, my grandmother's room was the first door on the right, and I think she taught in that same room for 30 years. She taught sixth grade. And down that hall was the library, which I ended up being a librarian, so that was a really important place to me. Mrs. Roberta Hostetter was the librarian. She lived just about a block from the school, and she was also the PE teacher, which I thought was an interesting combination. And I remember her wearing her kind of black tie-up Oxford shoes and a dress with, you know, this whistle around her neck so she could whistle at the kids, you know, in the gym. And she was wonderful. Mrs. Janine Pittman was the art teacher, and her room was next. And then music was down on the end, and that was Mrs. Phelps. And I think her name was Ione, but I'm not positive about her first name. And then if you went in the front door and turned left, there was Mrs. Helga Bailey, who taught fourth grade, and Mrs. Edra Bell, who taught third, and Mrs. Mary Gold, who taught kindergarten. And isn't that the best name for a kindergarten teacher, Mary Gold? And it turns out that she was the grandmother of a girl that I met much later in my life and became a really good friend with. And we finally figured out that our grandmothers had taught together. Just before you got to the kindergarten room on that end of the building, was you turned right again, and that was the first grade classroom. That was Mrs. Smith, and I remember a lot from first grade. I remember going to visit the turkey farm in Garden City. That was a big deal, and nobody else remembers that, so I hope that's not a memory that not a false memory I have, but I think I remember visiting a turkey farm in Garden City. One of the homeroom mothers made us Christmas stockings, which I still have with my name Rebecca on it, with, you know, sequins and everything. Moms had time to do things like that then. Mrs. Lucille Swiden was my second grade teacher, and Mrs. Swiden, pretty early in the school year that year, got, I think it was mumps or measles. And that was a really hard thing for an adult. I mean, I guess it still is, but it was really, in those days, I know, really hard if an adult got those childhood diseases. And she was gone for quite an extended period of time. And we had a really nice substitute, but I kind of had a little breakdown that year, and I did not want to go to school. And I wanted to stay home with my grandmother. And I think, you know, she had just retired. And I think I was still probably, I was 3 when my mom died. So I was having a little abandonment issues, I think. And my grandmother had to come sit in the back of the classroom and stamp books and grade papers and do things, you know, so that I would stay in school. And the other teachers kind of would you know, said, oh, I'm not sure she's doing the right thing. And Mrs. Hostetter, who was her good friend, would say, well, I, you know, Fanny will take care of it. I think everything will be fine. And I guess it was fine because I ended up loving school and, you know, been in school for the rest of my life. So I guess that's, you know, proves that she did the right thing. I remember playing jacks. I remember the boys playing marbles right outside the door by Mrs. Phelps' room on the north end of the school. I remember that we checked out stilts and other kind of playground equipment from a little room in the back of the gymnasium, and we could take them out for recess and play on the stilts. And pogo sticks. I just thought about pogo sticks. We had those too. There were class pictures that hung all along the wall on the library hall, and I remember playing Red Rover, you know, out on the playground. So I have a lot of good memories of Pleasant Porter. I think almost everyone does. I see a lot of comments on Facebook, and when anybody says anything about Pleasant Porter, people always comment on what a good time they had there and how much they learned. When we lived on 42nd Street, we lived not far, again, as I say, from Red Fork Corner, but we were also just up a hill from Crystal City. And by the time that I was was old enough to remember, you know, 7, 8, 9, Crystal City Shopping Center was there. And I guess it must have been pretty new because I think the amusement park was still there when I was very young. I mean, the remnants of it. So it must have been built right at that time. And my grandmother, I can't imagine doing this now, but my grandmother sent me down. It was my Aunt Georgie's birthday in August. And my grandmother needed some things from Crystal City, so she sent me. Well, we moved away from there before I turned 10, so I must have been 9 when she sent me on this little expedition to Crystal City. And I still remember that with pride, I think, because she trusted me to go do her errands for her. But I remember going to Safeway to pick up something she needed for lunch. I went to Mary Lou's Bakery, which was next door to the grocery store, and bought, some kind of dessert. She needed a present for Aunt Georgie, so I went down to the drugstore to, Crawford Drug, and bought her a little plaster of Paris squirrel for her patio. And I had all these things, and how was I going to get them home? So I remember going into the ladies at the bakery and asking them if I could leave some of my packages there while I went to buy more things. And pretty soon I had all my things together and got back to the house with them. But I think, I was 9 years old. I wasn't very old to be sent on a shopping expedition, but I still remember that my grandmother trusted me to do that. Crystal City was a cool place to go back in those days. Besides the Safeway and Mary Lou's Bakery and Crawford Drug was really neat because they had a soda fountain in the back. And what a lot of people remember, they had all these pictures of the ancient Greek and Roman doctors and druggists and, all those kinds of things. Those pictures were all around the soda fountain, so we'd always look at those pictures while we were having our sodas. There was a Taco Hut, C.R. Anthony's, Mrs. Nafee's Dress Store. My grandmother had taught the Nafee girls, so she knew Mrs. Nafee. It was called Joe's Ready to Wear, Tony's Shoes, Frug's, TGNY, Otasco. I loved Oklahoma Tire and Supply. My grandfather bought me a swing set from Oklahoma Tire and Supply. And, I was such a big girl, I could read at a pretty early age. And they came bringing the swing set on the truck. And Grandpa tried to tell me that he bought that swing set for me. And I said, "You didn't either. I saw that truck. That truck said Oklahoma Tire and Supply. That's who bought it for me. It wasn't you." So, anyway, we all remember Otasco. There was a record store in the bowling alley where we took, my best friend and I took bowling lessons one summer. But at the end of my fourth grade year, we moved because the Red Fork Expressway was going to take the house on 42nd Street. And my great-grandmother, Big Mom, had just passed away, so we moved into her house at 3319 West 38th Street behind Park School. So I went to 5th and 6th grade at Park. I had Mrs. Richardson in the 5th grade, and I remember I was quite interested in learning about the explorers that year. That was an interesting thing for me, the people that first came and explored America. And I had Miss Marguerite Stewart in the 6th grade, and I loved her. She read The Secret Garden to us, and that's still one of my favorite books. I was in science class there when John F. Kennedy was assassinated, so I remember that happening. It was new for me and my brother, to be in this new neighborhood. So we played on, rode our bikes on the hill at Park and played on the jungle gym. We climbed trees and went up on the hill. And probably nobody remembers this book, but I loved a book when I was in elementary school called Freckles by Jean Stratton Porter. And it was about a boy who only had one hand, but he was hired to walk the perimeter of a timber land that was owned, by a company to keep people from stealing any of the timber, any of the lumber. So And he kind of made a little sanctuary for himself in the forest, you know, where he was guarding, and planted all kinds of things, and that was his little special place. And so I tried to build one of those on Red Fork Hill. I got, you know, seeds and things and tried to plant. And I think I planted on a slope and everything washed away. But I was trying to build myself a little sanctuary like Freckles had. We had a little grocery store in Red Fork then called Carl's. And I would go down to Carl's grocery store. My friend and I would walk down there and we would get cold pops in bottles, you know, glass bottles out of those cases, you know, with the little serrated edges that held the Cokes and you had to pull them through. And they probably hated to see me coming at Carl's because I can remember at least two occasions where I dropped things there. I was quite a clumsy child. I dropped a big jar of pickles there, I think, one time. And I also knocked over the gumball machine in their store one time, so they probably just rolled their eyes when they saw me coming. At the end of elementary school and into junior high, some of the things we did for fun, I played softball on a team. I hit the first three home runs of the sixth grade season. We played our games at the West Side Y, and we really loved doing that. We spent every Saturday morning at the Glider Roller Rink, which was down on, it's right off now off of Skelly Drive, off of I-44. And it was Williams Auction, and then now it's something else. I don't know. It's about just before you get to the 33rd West Avenue exit from on I-44. It would be on the other side of the highway, but that was a Saturday morning thing we did. I went to junior high at Clinton. I do remember some of my teachers there as well. Mrs. Koonsman was my seventh grade teacher, and I credit her with teaching me to outline, which I've used all my life. She made us outline every chapter of the geography book, and I can still outline with the best of them. I was a library aide. Our librarian, Mrs. Roberts, on one special occasion, took all the library aides to meet a girl who had just written a book and who was from Tulsa, and she was Essie Hinton. And we got to meet her, and I have an autographed copy of, you know, the first edition of The Outsiders, signed by Susie Hinton. She signed it Susie. It was pretty, you know, it was pretty special to us to think that somebody not much older than we were could write a book and get it published. And I tell my kids all the time that she started young adult literature. She, you know, she's the reason that we have great books for kids now. I remember shopping downtown and at Utica Square. Our parents would just drop us off downtown, you know, which no one would think of probably of doing now with junior high girls, I don't know. But we went to, you know, Brown Duncan and Vandiver's and Seidenbox and Stewart's and all those, you know, cool places that were downtown. And I loved clothes then and still do. At school, we weren't allowed to wear pants until I was a senior in high school, and they finally said we could wear pants in school. So every day it was dresses, and I kind of miss those days when, you know, I teach middle school, and all of our kids wear jeans and black hoodies, and that's all they wear. I kind of miss the cute clothes that we used to have when we were kids. And, of course, music was wonderful when we were kids. I went to a lot of concerts when I was probably in junior high. Beach Boys and the Herman's Hermits and Paul Revere and the Raiders, the Animals, the Monkees. We loved all those. And we had Teen Town at Reed Park on the west side, Reed Recreation Center on Friday nights, I think, had Teen Town.
And the girls would all stand on one side of the gym, and the boys would all stand on the other side of the gym, and you would hope that you maybe got to dance three times during the evening.
Excuse me, may I interrupt you just a minute?
Yeah.
The concerts you went to, where were they usually held?
Oh, they were at the convention center downtown, you know, just the old convention center downtown.
Okay.
That's where most of them were.
Okay. Yeah, I meant to say that because, yeah, that was all, you know, that's all there was. I don't remember ever going to the Brady as a kid for any kind of concerts. I went, we went once to see the ballet there, I think. But other than that, it was, you know, the Civic Center.
So. Okay, thank you.
Yep. I was a rainbow girl when I was in junior high. I think in seventh grade or eighth grade, I got into the Rainbow Girls, and that was a fun thing that I spent a lot of time with, and I ended up being a worthy advisor in the Rainbows. Our family hadn't been, I mean, I had an uncle who had been a Mason, but that wasn't a big thing in our family, but, you know, but a lot of my friends were in the Rainbow Girls, so I joined too. I went to Webster. Webster High School is still just the most beautiful school that ever was. And I was there pretty much every time the door was open. You know, I was involved in plays and student council, and I went to Girl State. I played Emily in Our Town when I was a senior. I was Girl of the Year. I loved Mr. Wilcox, who was our speech teacher. And I believe the auditorium is still dedicated to him. He was just a wonderful man. He, you know, spent his whole life, I think, at Webster, and was yearbook sponsor and director of all the plays. And he was wonderful. It was the 60s then when I was in junior high and high school, and one of the names that I remember was Jim Snook. He was a boy that had a great singing voice and played Curly in Oklahoma at Webster when he was there. He was older than I was, but I knew him because he dated the sister of the little boy that I was, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend with about sixth grade. And Mike would call me on the phone, and then Jim would get on the phone and sing to me. So I thought he was pretty cool. And he died in Vietnam, and that's, I always, when I go to Washington, D.C., he's the name that I always look for on the wall, because he was nice to a little girl who, you know, he didn't really know, but he would sing to me on the phone. I graduated from Webster in 1971, and the night that we graduated was a huge storm. They used to always do the graduation ceremonies out in front of the school, and it was beautiful. Two lines of kids would come in, and we had practiced the two lines coming in from either side of the building and converging on those beautiful steps going up to the school. And they already had all the, you know, seats for this, for the audience, and the piano was already out there, and the wind came up and the piano started to roll across the circle drive, and they had to cram all of us into the gym and have the our graduation ceremonies in the gym. The steam was rising off of people. We were so hot and wet. And George Nye was our speaker. He had not become governor yet, but he was lieutenant governor, I think, and he was our speaker at our graduation. And he kind of joked all the way through it, which kind of made me mad because I thought it was a very solemn occasion and he should be more solemn, but he was trying, I'm sure, to make everybody feel like they weren't going to blow away. So I went to Oklahoma State University for a semester, and then I came home and stayed with my parent, my grandmother and my dad, and went to school at TU for the rest of my years. I majored in speech education. I was kind of funny. I knew from probably third grade that I wanted to be a teacher, but every year it would change. you know, in third grade, I was going to be a third grade teacher, and in fourth grade, I was going to be a fourth grade teacher, and in high school, I decided I was going to be a speech teacher because of Mr. Wilcox's influence, and so that's where I started. I taught speech and English in Manford for 5 years, and then I had a chance to become the librarian, and I went back to school and got my library certification because that's something I'd always wanted to be too, was a librarian, and I have loved it. I really have. I'm retiring at the end of this year, so but I have loved the years that I've been a librarian. While I was going to school at TU, I worked at Mid-States Pipe and Supply, which, you know, petroleum supply company that was downtown in the Field Tower building. So that was fun for me. I was a part of the world that I didn't know at all, you know, the business world. And I enjoyed working downtown. That was something I got to be more familiar with that I didn't know about. I got married in 1973, and then my husband was in the service, and he got sent to Korea, and I didn't think I was going to go, so I enrolled at TU for another semester, but then he found out there were wives in Korea, and I could go if I wanted to, so I went and lived in Korea for 8 months in 1974 and 75. We lived in the village. We didn't live in army housing. There wasn't any, so we lived in the village. We pumped water from a pump. We had an outside bathroom. We didn't have indoor plumbing. We had a space heater, and that was quite a fun 8 months of my life. I had my son in 1976, and then I finally had gotten enough hours at Tulsa University that I was, you know, could do my student teaching, and I did my student teaching at Berry Hill, and I was the first intern teacher that Berry Hill ever had, so that was written up in the paper, and then I started teaching at Manford in 1977, and taught there for 20 years, and I've taught for 20 years at I taught 21 at Manford, and at the end of this year will be 21 in Sand Springs. So I will retire with 42 years. I almost beat my grandmother. She had 43 total, and I always thought that was pretty amazing. I had to make a decision at some point whether I wanted to beat her or tie her or what I wanted to do. And she had 43, and I'm going to have 42. So I'll let her have that extra year that I don't have. And the thing that I love to do, I've gotten, as many older people do, get more and more interested in history the older you get. We try to interest our kids at school in history and genealogy, particularly. That has been my hobby for many years, and that's my grandmother's influence as well. But I have tried to teach, you know, to get kids interested in genealogy, and sometimes you hit a spark with some of them, and sometimes you don't. But myself and another teacher right now are doing a genealogy project with our kids at school, and so that has been a fun thing to do. So that's kind of my life, I guess. What do you need? What else do you need to know?
I think you did a very comprehensive story about your family.
Sorry, I hope it wasn't too comprehensive.
I can tell you do genealogy. I'll tell you a good place to end. Tell me where your name came from.
Oh, I'm really Rebecca. I've always gone by Becky, but I'm really Rebecca, and I was named for Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. My dad and my mother liked that book, and so they named me.
And you may even know the author of that book.
You know, I think it, Kate Douglas Wiggins, is that correct?
I can't remember.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Two teachers, one of us ought to know that. So, Becky, thank you for a wonderful rendition of your life in Tulsa and the school history you've given. It's been awesome.
Good.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good morning. This is Loretta Bertelot at the Tulsa Historical Society, and I'm here with Becky Hatchett, and she's going to share some things from her writings of her grandmother. Becky, why don't you tell your grandmother's name and about what dates you think these are from?
Okay. My grandmother's name was Fanny Castle, and then she married Weaver Harris Smith and became Fanny Castle Smith. She was a teacher for many years on the west side, and she and her Castle family came to Red Fork in 1915, and they lived in the Clinton farmhouse. They rented the Clinton farmhouse, which is where Clinton Junior High School is now, from 1915 to 1919. And I found half of her description of the Clinton house, and the part that I found is more about the grounds. So there has to be a first page to this that is lost, but the second page ends with the word kitchen, or begins with the word kitchen, so that was the description of the house, and then this is the grounds. It had five fireplaces and huge chimneys. These were the outstanding features of the house. The yard was spacious with 8 or 10 large cedar trees and a maple. A big cistern to the south of the house furnished water. Farther south was a large cattle barn constructed of native stone and native lumber. A two-room house for hired help was situated east of the house. An orchard was located north that extended to about where Southwest Boulevard runs at present. So that's the description of the land around the Clinton farmhouse. And then she also had created a list of businesses of early day Red Fork, and I think these must have been in the 19-teens. B.M. Jones Drug, Dixon Goodman Lumber, Brooks General Store, Colonel May's General Store, Bank of Red Fork, the Post Office, which was run at different times by the Brooks and the Castles, Jacob's Blacksmith Shop, Bond's Chili Parlor, O.V. Fields Candy, Livery Barn, and Bryant Well Digging.
Okay, well, thank you for saving that. And
thanks.
It's nice to have that in your grandmother's handwriting.
Yes, I know. Her beautiful handwriting.
So thank you, Becky.
Thank you.